The Virtual Curbside is a production of the Utah Chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics, the Utah AAP, working together to improve children's lives through education, advocacy, and networking. Hi, this is Paul Workus from the Utah AAP. Welcome to this week's edition of the Virtual Curbside, where we bring pediatric providers together with subspecialists to get smarter about all things pediatric and better acquainted as a community of caregivers. The Virtual Curbside is brought to you in part by a generous grant from Primary Children's Hospital. Primary Children's Hospital, the child first and always.
Welcome back to the Virtual Curbside. It is always a pleasure. I look forward to months with 5 weeks because I get to talk to my friend Angelo Giardino. How are you, Angelo?
I'm fine, Paul. How are you?
I'm just fine, thanks. You know, it's interesting because there's a touch of spring in the air. And it's one of those years that I kind of look forward to these late snowstorms because I would rather not drink dirt this summer. And so, and the mountains are so beautiful when they're snow dusted and it's blue skies. So it's looking like it's going to be a good couple of weeks coming up. How are things for you?
Things are great. You know, there's a little bit of optimism in the air. I think it's well-founded, but the COVID numbers are down. And I think people are starting to think we might be turning a little bit of a corner. So there's a certain optimism in the hospital and in the clinics that we might be able to maybe kind of start thinking about the next phase.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think we've talked about how we wonder how this changes things. Mm-hmm. And I think there's real hunger to get back to normal. But I think that the rational part of me thinks that I hope there's kind of a new normal, that there's some things that we consider a little bit more than we did before.
Yeah, well, I was just at a big academic meeting in Denver last week. There were a couple thousand pediatricians there. And I don't even think anybody went to the sessions. Everybody wanted to be in the hallway talking to each other. So it was really a lot of fun. It was very energizing.
Yeah, that's great. Well, today we get to talk about, I think, an author who means a lot to a lot of people. I think Brené Brown has been extraordinarily influential. And the book you've chosen for us today is Dare to Lead.
Yes.
So do we dare to talk about it?
Oh, please. You start.
Okay. I wanted to just sort of situate us a little bit with Brené Brown, because I think she's a fascinating character, somebody, an academic with extraordinary public appeal. An extraordinary public influence. I do think it's interesting that she occupies the Huffington Foundation Brené Brown Endowed Chair at the University of Houston in the Graduate College of Social Work. How many people occupy a chair that's named for themselves?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, but usually you don't sit in that chair.
I mean, to be honest, I do own all of my own chairs at home.
Yes, of course.
But very few of them are named for me. She's a fascinating person because I think her research interests are so incredibly influential because she is so interested in human connection. And I think that she has redefined some terms that we use, but I think by the way that she's redefined some of these terms, I think it allows us to see some of these terms with new eyes, things like courage and vulnerability and shame and empathy. These are all things that are very important to her. The thing that I find so appealing about her is not only that, but also how humanely she talks about these things. I mean, there's a certain degree of self-revelation and honesty. And when she talks about it, she says, you really have to be at the point where you understand where you are in this narrative to be able to represent it that way. She's somebody who came to prominence. I think she's, as she talks about in her book that influenced this book in Daring Greatly, she talks about how doing that first TED talk really required a lot of vulnerability on her part. And I think that on the other hand, I think she has been a person who has sort of defined how a TED talk can vault you into the public imagination. So we'll supply links to both of her TED talks, The Power of Vulnerability and Listening to Shame. She's had 6 number one New York Times bestsellers and also has a Netflix special from a couple of years ago. What do you think of that? How's that for an academic career?
She's really an impressive character. And honestly, Paul, I lived in Houston for 13 years And I was not aware of her work then. I was obviously living under a rock somewhere. Had I known that she was in Houston, I would have just driven 10 minutes down the road and gone to talk to her.
Finagled the conversation.
Yeah, I was really disappointed that I missed that opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell me what it is that made you recommend this book.
Well, a couple things. I think her work is really interesting. I love reading her books. There's a lot of material in there. So, you know, it would take a whole Netflix special to talk about everything. But I like how she, quite frankly, gets to the balance that you need to have in leadership. And, you know, if I could throw out one thing, she talks about one of the false dichotomies in leadership, and it's Viking versus victim. Mm-hmm. And I really like that imagery because, you know, the Viking is all about winning and, you know, not paying attention to your feelings and just like plowing ahead. And then, of course, the victim is like total having feelings and then not being kind of able to get out of that situation. And it's really something between that, right? You know, depending on the situation, you may have to command and lead and direct. You can get bruised in certain leadership situations. So you may kind of have some experiences of feeling vulnerable or victimized. But it's all about kind of getting in between being the Viking and the victim. And I really, really like how she always kind of talks about the myths in leadership and maybe the false dichotomies. And I find that imagery really helpful.
And I think she would argue that there probably should be less pillaging in the way we approach leadership.
Yeah. Yeah. And she uses interesting words, and you mentioned some of them, like courage, vulnerability. One, I think she kind of defines something. Let me just read this one. The courage to be vulnerable is not about winning or losing. It's about the courage to show up when you can't predict or control the outcome. And that's how a lot of life is, right? It's about showing up and putting your best foot forward and being respectful of the people you're working with, and then trying to get to a good outcome. Maybe having to make decisions between some really bad options. But that to me is what she's talking about when she talks about courage and vulnerability.
Yeah, so but the whole notion of vulnerability is something that I think, and I think there's a particular importance in the way we're trained in medicine sometimes, that we're trained to not be vulnerable. And I think she would argue that understanding your feelings and being willing to be vulnerable is actually necessary to really be courageous.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and she's not, somewhere in the book here, she talks about the fact that she's not supporting like no boundaries and then just like completely going to work and like spilling out every single personal detail of your life and then burdening everybody you work with all of your problems. Again, she's very balanced. Like you should share what you ought to share with folks so that there's some intimacy between you and some trust, but you should really be cautious about how much you share and when it's appropriate to share that information.
Yeah, I think that in a lot of ways that my understanding of the way she represents vulnerability is recognizing that what's near and dear to your heart is sometimes required for you to do the things you have to do. I think that we think of being courageous as, you know, there's no way that I can fail. And I think what she argues is that being willing to take a chance is and expose our vulnerability is necessary.
Yeah, I think so. And she also really advocates for being upfront and honest with people in the workplace. So I love that she kind of talks a little bit about how, you know, clarity is a form of kindness. So using a lot of nuance and being overly courteous and polite is usually not a good thing because the folks you're interacting with may miss the nuance. So you're actually being unkind to them because you're not really positioning them to have a really kind of useful interaction with you. So I use this a lot where I tell people, you know, being clear is actually kind. So I'm going to really tell you what's on my mind so that then we can have that conversation.
We've all had conversations before where we come away and say, I have no idea what just happened there. And let's be honest, I'm sure that people have come away from conversations with me and said, I don't know what he just said.
Yeah. No, I think there's some real wisdom there though, because you really do straddle the other person with an extra job if you're being so right. nuanced, they have to kind of try to figure out what's going to bother.
Right, right. If they have to get out their nuanced English dictionary, I have not expressed myself very well.
Yeah. You know, so I do think, Paul, when somebody invests the time to read one of Brené Brown's books, after the whole experience, I think you really feel affirmed and energized
right.
to do some of the things she talks about. Like, I love how she talks about rumbling, which is truly just kind of setting up your interaction so that you can actually all be honest. You all agree that you're going to get along with each other after the conversation, but you're willing to kind of really talk about the tough stuff during the right. conversation.
Right, right. You know, some of this vulnerability reminds me a little bit of a book we discussed a couple of months ago, the Mindset book,
yes.
that in order to really grow, we can't really stay in a comfortable, confident position. We have to be able to be vulnerable and say, I'm going to make mistakes, because if I don't make mistakes, I haven't tried enough to grow.
Yeah. And I think she gives like an example somewhere in here, but like you just said, like, I think you have to, certainly with your team, you have to be willing to say you're going to make mistakes and you're open to the feedback. Now, if you're talking to a group of investors that just gave you $10 million, you probably shouldn't be talking too much about all the mistakes you're going to make
right.
at that point. But right. and she calls that out. Like, you have to have some kind of, you know, some type of maturity to kind of know how to message and how to talk with people. But you always should be honest and forthright and be willing to kind of deal with the issues and the topics that you have to deal with. And I think that's really one of her messages.
On the other hand, I think there was some vulnerability implied when you talked to those investors and said, I need you to invest in this, because I think that anytime you have that conversation, there's a tacit understanding that it's not 100%, but you still are going out on a limb to do that. And if you never venture, then you're never going to make it happen.
Yeah, and I think she would just say you should have a spirit of integrity and
yes.
you should be letting yes. those people know kind of what the... Like, you know, in the academic setting, what are the confidence intervals we have around this bet we're going to make, as opposed to saying it's all great, you know, just don't worry about it. I'll take care of it.
That's the work of a confidence man. And I guess in the current era, we would say confidence person, because I think anyone can be a flim-flam person.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's always a fine line. But again, I think she would always say, go back to the core principles of being courageous. So show up, even if you don't know what the absolute outcome is going to be. Have a spirit of integrity. So always kind of say what you know is honest and true, and then be respectful. You know, those are like the guiding principles that we keep coming back to. You know, when we did the book on everything I needed to learn, I learned in kindergarten. You know, these are kind of truths that all these different writers keep getting to.
Right, right. One of the things that really surprised me is when she talks about core values, you know, you read the average mission statement and they're usually like 35 core values. These are the things that we believe in. And she would argue that that misses the point.
Yep.
Absolutely. She would argue you should know what your core values are, but you should prioritize two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it takes a fair amount of soul searching to know what your two core values are. Well, what do you think of that?
Yeah. You know, again, I love these management leadership techniques, and I know what she's getting at. There's an aphorism in business school. If everything's a priority, nothing's a priority. Because mm-hmm. then how do you make decisions if like right. every single thing is important? And as a generalist, you know, right. I like everything. But I right. do know that in leadership, you do have to prioritize. And I think that's what she's getting to.
But I think even in the practice of medicine, I think deciding what things are your core values in terms of teaching people, I think that's incredibly important.
Yeah, no, I agree. Again, I think if you're reading this book for kind of like a checklist and a how-to, I think she's a little bit more comprehensive than that. But yeah, she does yeah. kind of give steps and stages, and she does have an inventory. I think you had come across that, the braving inventory.
Let's talk about braving a little bit. So I'm always a little bit skeptical about, you know, the Procrustean bed of a mnemonic device, because you always end up, there always end up being at least a couple of them that feel a little clunky.
Yeah.
But I respect it nonetheless. So let's talk about some of these values. So boundary setting. So braving, B-R-A-V-I-N-G. First one is boundary setting. What does she mean by boundary setting?
Well, that one is really kind of in the work environment. you kind of know your boundaries and you respect your own boundaries and you know the other person's boundaries and you're willing to talk about them. So I think that's really important. You know, for example, we talk a lot about supporting family and whatnot. So again, if you have a lot of folks that are young and have young kids, scheduling a meeting at 5 o'clock so that they can't be home for dinner is not right. So like you're kind of intruding on their boundaries. And I think you have to be the kind of leader that would be open to hearing. There are certain times when you shouldn't schedule really important meetings because that interrupts my life.
Right, right. Reliability, I think, goes without saying, but the fact that it should go without saying, I think, means that you do have to say it, that being reliable is core value.
Yeah, say what you mean what you say. And if you make a commitment to do something, like show up at the meeting, right, having done it. And if you haven't done it, like send an email the day before and let people know. Because, you know, as opposed to kind of like showing up and then like, we can't do the work because you didn't do your part.
Exactly. Accountability, you know, goes along with that, doesn't it? And the thing is, I think that sometimes what's involved in accountability is sometimes I think for various reasons, something hasn't worked out, but acknowledging where the mistakes happen and how they happen, I think actually helps build people's trust.
I agree. I really do.
Yeah. What's vault closing?
So the vault closing, you know, this is really important. So like, this is a little rule I have. If I'm talking to someone and they say, so-and-so told me this, but don't tell anybody, then I'm never going to tell that person anything confidential because right, clearly they don't have a vault. But the vault is, if somebody tells you something that is sensitive or they ask you to hold it in confidence, that should be like in your vault.
Right, and, right.
You know, you should not be opening up that combination and letting what's in the vault out. So I do think, to me, it's a part of like trust building. But if you tell me something, I'm going to hold that in confidence and I'm not going to be a gossip.
Yeah, because if I'm sharing somebody's narrative that they haven't shared or that they haven't asked me to share, that's right, gossip. And gossip sounds about as dignified as it is.
Yeah, exactly. You know, some people love, that's their currency to influence, right? Because they always have the little tidbit that no one else has.
Right.
But, you know, that to me is a real symptom of a not healthy work environment, if that's kind of how people curry favor with each other.
Curry favor either in a negative or a positive way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because holding stuff over people, that's blackmail. Integrity. So we're B-R-A-V-I, integrity. It seems like that we should understand that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I do think it's important to like, obviously speak the truth, right? Mm-hmm. But also to demonstrate a real commitment to choosing what's right over what's easy or expedient. I think that's part of integrity as well. So, right, you know, sometimes I'm sure we've all been kind of almost like on this freight train and we're starting to do what is likely to be able to get done. And somebody on the train needs to say, no, wait a minute, is this the right thing to do? Mm-hmm. And that sometimes is a risk, but it's really necessary.
Non-judgment, again, yeah, this one I think is a little torture, but non-judgment, I'll spotter that one. But it's key, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, and again, she does some interesting things in the book around, I think she calls them empathy misses. So the classic, you know, somebody has a really tough experience and they tell you as a colleague, and then like she talks about a couple of them are really classic, like, well, it could have been worse. That's of no help.
No.
The other one I think is, wow, I'm surprised that you would have that performance shortfall. I've always held you in such high regard. Well, like you just slapped that person down.
Yeah, exactly. So the G is generosity. I think that's an underrated quality in the world.
I agree. You know, and Paul, what I see in the workplace, generosity has a lot to do with being willing to give somebody the benefit of the doubt.
Right.
Don't assume ill intention. And certainly if something has gone well, making sure you recognize them, be grateful, be thankful. You know, if you know who their boss is, you let them know that they really hit a grand slam and do it in a really kind way. And then again, if they miss something, also thinking of kind of a really respectful way of letting somebody know they missed the mark. But I think that's all part of generosity.
No question. And I think that it's easy and convenient sometimes to not give credit where credit's due, to accept credit where credit should go somewhere else. And I think that you build much more of a sense of cooperation, collaboration when you acknowledge what everyone else has done. And I think you're much more likely to encourage good behavior down the road if you've acknowledged good behavior.
No, I agree. And you know, it just makes for a much nicer environment when there can be some shared joy over somebody's high performance. I think that's really, I mean, I really relish that. And that's, I will say, one of the nice things about being at Primary Children's is that is the kind of environment we have here. It's not a win-lose. It's like everybody wins if you do well.
Right. I think far too often we see all of these things as a zero-sum game somehow. But really, it's when we all work together, it works better.
Yeah. And again, you know, I've worked at a number of different places. I have been at some institutions where if you get an accolade, somehow the other people on the team felt like they lost something. And it's like, oh, this is not a good place to be.
Right. You know, I think one of the take-home messages of a book like this, because I think a book like this really does stress, I mean, since her interest is human connection, I think that the principle of human connection is at the very center of what she talks about generally. That I think it's not just a matter of us trying to develop these skills ourselves, but rewarding other people who are applying these skills, whether or not they're doing it, you know, based on having read the book or just on, you know, taking a leap and showing the right kind of courage.
I agree. And just to get back to that braving, one of them, you know, when you make a mistake, I think going to apologize to someone if you've like stepped on their toes is really, you know, it's hard to do. But if you think about it from their standpoint, if you apologize when you've stepped on their toes, I think it really builds them up somewhat. And so I kind of feel like she's really kind of, I think, inspiring us to be really decent people at work. And then that breeds those connections that you just talked about.
And wouldn't you say that, you know, bringing this full circle, that it's difficult to do because it shows vulnerability?
Yes.
But showing that vulnerability is the truly courageous thing to do.
Absolutely. And, you know, all of us, you know, went into healthcare because we wanted to do something good.
Right.
So it is a way, I think, of us living out our values, even on like the leadership, management, administrative side.
Right. Well, and, you know, any of us who work with kids inevitably work also with parents, which is also an incredibly vulnerable thing to do. And I think I think that understanding the courage that implies is incredibly important.
I agree. So I really encourage our listeners, you know, pick up one of the Brené Brown books. I really like this Dare to Lead, just because I think it was written, you know, several books into her trajectory. So it's kind of a synthesis of a lot of her thoughts.
Yep. And also Daring Greatly, that is a kind of the foundation that that she adapted here for leadership.
Absolutely.
All right. Anything else you want to say, Angelo?
Like many of the books that we've talked about, it's really a lot about reframing so that you can make the most of your interactions at work. I think one of the things, you know, she tends to use quotes from different people that she's talked to. So she talks about Melinda Gates and how she was at many meetings and, you know, she's meeting with really, you know, knowledgeable people on public health and government and whatnot. And she always kind of felt like, you know, maybe I don't know enough. And then I think Melinda Gates got to the point where she realized, I know enough to ask a decent question. And that's what my role is to like ask a decent question and clarify some points. And I think that's really affirming to all of us, because I don't think I'm the smartest guy in the room, but I think I know how to ask a question or two. And that, I think, is really empowering. And I think this book really could be useful for anybody to kind of get a sense of how to be comfortable in the work environment and make the most of the situation that you're in.
Yeah. And I think there's a reason why she is so influential, that I think she really does reframe the conversation in a useful and interesting and important way.
Yeah, good. Well, thanks for letting us discuss this book.
Thanks for coming by. So look forward to talking to you again, I hope, in the not too distant future.
I hope so. Thank you.
All right. Give my best to everyone at Primary Children's.
I will. Thanks.
Thanks for joining us. We look forward to getting together again next time. The Virtual Curbside is available on iTunes or wherever you find your other favorite podcasts. Be sure to like us and subscribe. We want you to like us both because we're needy that way and because that will help other listeners like you find us. Check out our website, vcurb.com, for supporting materials, schedules, and other great stuff. The Virtual Curbside is an educational production of the Utah chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics. The opinions expressed in this podcast, while carefully considered, are ultimately the opinions of the presenters and not necessarily of the American Academy of Pediatrics or our employers. And remember, the content of this podcast shouldn't be seen as a substitute for seeking actual personal medical care. If this is an emergency, hang up and dial 911. Otherwise, schedule a visit with a caring healthcare provider to try to get to the bottom of your concerns. None of this could happen without Elisa Stoddard, our extraordinary executive director of the Utah AAP. Many thanks to Tim Cosgrove for his help on the website and logo design. Production design and editing thanks to Phil Workus, who also composed the theme music. See you next time.